We have a sponsor now.
Yeah? Who is it?
We're cheerleading up for a sponsor.
Fuck
actually, somebody else is sponsor, but we're gonna wet our beak with their sponsor.
That's what I'm
saying.
It's
like we're taxing them on their sponsor.
Hell yeah.
You want us to sponsor them on your show? We need a cut. We've been doing this for almost a year. Haven't
a little
seen
break.
One dime.
Nothing.
Nothing, man. We haven't seen a dime.
Where's those decimals at?
So, is Sattva Mattress Company the new sponsor for All Things Comedy? Sattva Mattress Company, because sometimes, man, I know I've been to your house, you got that whack-ass mattress, bro, with a spring coming out, man, like poking you in the back. You ever seen those, man? When you have those whack mattresses.
Oh, you got to fucking cut that spring off
or
bend it.
Or
your, right,
I know my brother, bro, he used to pee on his bed, so our mattress had plastic and then sheet over it. Because that was soaked through, man. Pinche mion. He used to pee on buses. We used to call him camion. All right, people.
Hey, guys. It's Tom and Christina from Your Mom's House podcast here to tell you about a wonderful company named Sattva that makes the best mattress we've ever slept on. Now, they're online only, which means there's no store. And you might go, why would you do that? You can't lay on that bed for a couple minutes and see if you like. No. You get it straight to the house, and yeah. Now we're living like kangs.
We're sleeping on a janky, old, inherited comedian mattress for 10 years, and every morning my back hurt. Now this king-size Sattva mattress is the bomb.
Well, now Sattva has a new brand called Loom and Leaf, and they are launching it at South by Southwest.
That's right. Loom and Leaf. That's L-O-O-M and Leaf. Right now at South by Southwest. And basically, that's their memory foam mattress is what Loom and Leaf is. Anyway, Sattva's partnered up with A&E and their hit show Bates Motel. A&E's Bates Motel is actually open for business. So you can stop by and enter your name for a chance to stay the night at the Bates Motel during South by Southwest.
Ooh.
And for a chance to win a Loom and Leaf mattress. Come on.
That's awesome. This is premium, perfect memory foam mattress, the highest quality plant-based foam sourced in the United States, eco-friendly, highest quality everything. And best of all, you're going to get this Tempur-Pedic style mattress for half the price.
Get your life.
And just like Sattva, Loom and Leaf offers delivery with courtesy installation and takeaway. You can try this product, this Loom and Leaf mattress, for 75 days.
Okay.
Hassle-free. Follow Loom and Leaf at Loom and Leaf on Twitter and Facebook, and make sure you stop by the Bates Motel to win a memory foam mattress at South by Southwest.
What's up, fool? Felipe Esparza. Just got back from Houston, Texas. It was badass. What's up, fool, with Rodrigo Torres right here.
Yeah, man.
They were asking for you, man.
Send him a little recording, dog. A
couple of gorditas say, hey, where's Rodrigo at? Some girl brought out, she brought Girl Scout cookies for you. So I had to give them to the opener because you weren't there. He was begging for them. Tio. Tio from episode 3.
That Theo with the cardigan.
Yeah, man. A year later, man, he's still dressed the same, got fatter, asking for rides.
Keith calls him Big Black.
Some comedians, you know, after the show, they try to pick up on women. This guy's just trying to get a ride home. Listen, man, I don't want nothing from you, man. I just want a ride home, man.
That's a long ass
5
walk.
Miles east of the Katy Freeway. Dude, it was Houston, Texas H-town, last though. Week. Angela Johnson sold out 2 shows at the Verizon.
Damn.
Didn't bother me because I sold out 2 shows too on Saturday. And Pitbull, yeah. the singer, also had a big ass show. It was rodeo month.
Oh, out there, so it's all
popping
right now?
3 weeks of rodeo, fool.
Hell yeah, so everybody's
nothing
out,
nothing but cowboy boots and camel toes walking around.
And big ass tejanas, though.
But yeah, man, it was packed. So she sold out her show. Pitbull sold out his show. I sold out my show. That means there's enough Mexican audience for everyone,
oh,
man.
Oh, hell yeah. It's banging out there, dog.
The only thing that will ruin us, if Ozzy would be performing, then everything would be empty. Or Mana.
Hell yeah. I wanted to be in a band, dude.
So what's up, fool? What you do all week?
Chilling, dog. Fucking, you know, Sunset Room. Did a couple open mics. Fucking did a high school on Friday with Alfred.
A high school? What did they pay?
Fucking $35, dog.
Damn, man, I would say, now you know what, man, I'm out of here.
Do you want to go up there and practice, dog?
I would have told that school, you know what, man, I want you guys right now, start selling chocolates for my pay.
Well, the big thing in high schools is now is fools are slinging Red Hot Cheetos and Cokes because LA Unified banned that shit now. So undercover, they're popping fools with 12-packs and shit. Yeah, dude, that's a new underground hustle, dog.
Hot Cheetos inside the Coke can, they drink them like that?
Nah, just fuck. I don't know if they do that shit, but, you know, $1 a bag, fucking $2 for a soda. Yeah, dog.
When I was at Hollenbeck Junior High School, and my brother went to another school, and they didn't let the kids drink soda there. Like, there was no sodas. So my brother would bring in, like, 6 sodas.
Contraband.
And put them inside a locker, and he would sell it to students and teachers. Because there were no sodas there, and he got busted, man. What happened, man? Oh, man. This guy ratted me out, man. Could have wanted to give him no money.
Yeah, I guess he's the
fool. He got taxed, doc.
That, you get it, you're not suspended 3 times.
I was a hustler, man. I used to sell bootleg anything. Like, I remember one time, like, I knew this guy had long hair in my junior high school, Hollenbeck. And I said, you know what? Fuck. I used to call him the Count. He used to come in with a leather jacket, but he never wore it. He just put it on his shoulders. So I just said, look at the Count. He never spoke to anybody, but I said, what's up with the Count over here?
The hardest working man in show business.
He'll sit down, and then he put his jacket on his chair. And he came in one day, dude, and I showed him my mom's hairbrush.
Pinch of pain.
He tried to comb his hair with my mom's brush. He goes, man, sell it to me. I go, well, give me $8, bro.
$8,
and I sold out my mom's hairbrush for $8.
Scandalous.
The next day, my mom was like, you mean cepillo in mi pelo? Where's my hairbrush? I blamed that shit on my gay brother, bro. Like, you mean that Fabrizio over there, man, trying to comb his G.I. Joe's?
Have you ever told her you stole it, dog?
Hell no. I felt bad, eh? But you know, man,
I'm fucked up.
$8, bro. $8 in junior high school.
Just cepillo.
I used to go to my uncle's house, dude, and he would have, like, bootleg CDs, but before it was cassettes. Mm-hmm. Man, he made a killing off Thriller. Right. So I would get, like, whatever the kids wanted. I said, I'd come in, what you want, man? You want some Run DMC?
I used to buy recording
tapes. You want some Beastie Boys? So I would bring him cassettes with no listing. Hey, man, how do you know what song is next? By listening to it, fool. So sometimes, man, I would have to listen to the whole song. And write down, okay, the first song is Beat It, blah, blah, and give him a list.
Fools said Beat It. Yeah, dog. There's a lot of fools that hustled. I used to sell gum and Mexican candies. So we'd go to TJ and then bring them back over here.
Fucking chiclet, guy.
Hell yeah,
did you put on aluminum foil on your teeth? Like,
nah, legit? Fool. It was before there was Mexican stores out here, dog. Back in the days.
Did you have orange teeth like your material?
Hell no. Nah. I always had fucking clean teeth, dog.
You always had clean teeth? That means that everybody in your house had bad teeth, huh?
Before braces, fucking wildebeest teeth.
Real, you wore braces?
No. Yeah, yeah. My bottom teeth were messed up. The top ones were always the same.
Yeah, I went to a dentist today, man. I was depressing, man.
He's been cleaning you out and shit?
Yeah, he cleaned me out today, man. And then he goes, yeah, man, we're going to have to pull one of those teeth out. And I said, are you going to replace it temporarily with something? He goes, yeah, we might give you a brace. That's not going to work, man. I can't be doing comedy. Next thing you know, man, my fucking front tooth falls on somebody's drink.
Oh, clink.
Yeah, man, let me just get that out of there, man. Put it on.
This is a crazy ass chick. No, I'm going to keep it. Hey, it's mine.
It's mine, man. She puts it under her pillow, and she, the next day, Gabriel appears.
Fluffy. Damn.
So what's up? Maybe you've been watching Fresh Off the Boat?
I haven't.
Empire?
Up to the 5th episode, but what I have been watching, I caught up on 2 episodes finally on Netflix, House of Cards, the first 2. Yeah, man.
You didn't watch no Empire, fool?
No, I haven't watched Empire
yet. Weak.
No. I'll try it.
You know shit about Lucius?
Nah, nothing about Lucius, dog.
Well, the Fresh Off the Boat is based in 1995, so this Asian kid takes stinky tofu, you know, Chinese food, to his school, and everybody's grossed out, so everybody has Lunchables. Because Lunchables came around in 1995. And I had a kid, too, in 1995, like Philip. And so I knew about Lunchables. Fool. I remember I went to this food house. You know who I'm talking about. Hey, bro. And we brought some chicks over to his house. And I guess his wife, he had, like, a bunch of Lunchables. But these chicks were, like, 22, 23. They don't know nothing about Lunchables. You know, they have no kids. So they wanted to eat. So this fool opens up 10 Lunchables. And puts them all on plates.
I made a spread, bro.
Made a mean spread, bro. With mustard.
Improvising.
And tapatio sauce.
That's
so
nice.
There's some crackers, ham, and cheese. And he gives it to these girls. because hoes gotta eat. And they're eating it like, oh, this is so fancy.
Mesmerized.
Mesmerized. Wow, craft service.
I know people.
I know people, Raza. So, man, so we have two special guests today. Also, people, don't forget our bar. April 1st, our live podcast. 100% of our portion of the proceeds will be donated to All Things Comedy Network.
Yeah, man.
We'll have some past guests, trivia contest to win some free swag, and it will be on video on YouTube the next day. You can get tickets at www.icehousecomedy.com. So that's that.
Hell yeah. Live.
So what's up, fool, man? You like boxing, fool?
You
ever get knocked out?
No, I got kicked in the head, though, and I seen stars and shit.
Yeah, me too, man.
By a football player that I'm going to fucking kill.
You know how sweet it is when you knock somebody out, bro. Like, when they ain't expecting it. Like, they're just blabbering their mouth, bro, and then you shut it with the one-hitter quitter.
Pacquiao.
But let me tell you, man, but when you miss.
I slipped, dog. I didn't miss.
One time I tried to cheap shove some guy, and I missed, bro.
What happened, dog?
Oh, he fucking hit me in the back of the head on the way down. It was sad, dude. I went like this, dude. I'm no boxer, man. I don't know, connect nothing. So he probably was a boxer. He saw me pull my arm back and my leg forward. He got ready for that shit, right? So when I came out thinking, I don't know where his head was, dude, but I almost fell. And then he hit me in the back of the head. And then, of course, you know, man, I felt like Nike Cortex all over my face. But, yeah, man, it was bad. But when you do get one, man, it feels good, man. You're hitting a home run, especially the guy shorter than you and weight lighter than you. It's perfect, eh?
Can't win them all, eh?
Yeah, man. You can't be cheap shot somebody 6'4", then you got to go up like fucking He-Man and shit. What's up, fool? We have chilling, a boxer, man, tonight from my neighborhood, Boyle Heights, represent. East L.A. Give it up for Roy Pitbull Tapia. How you doing, bro?
Yeah, man, what's up? I'm doing great.
What's up, big dog?
What's up, man?
Chilling.
So you from East Los Angeles?
Yes, sir.
How'd you get started in boxing?
My father. You know, it's kind of been like a family thing. My dad fought. My grandpa fought. He tried taking on my brothers. And I was the only one out of me and my three brothers that actually liked it. So I stuck to it.
Yeah, man. My grandfather, my father, they were boxers too, man. I couldn't do it, man. They boxed tomatoes, grapes, oranges.
And your family been boxing here in L.A. the whole time or from Mexico?
No, man, from Mexico, actually. My dad grew up in Mexico. He's from Mexico City.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and my grandpa, too, and everybody. So I'm the first one that actually started in the States.
Oh, okay. Hell yeah, dude. There's a lot of fucking boxers from Mexico City, too, huh?
Yeah.
Marquez, too, is from Mexico City.
A lot of good fighters.
Hell yeah, dude.
So you just finished fighting, right? Your record is 10-0?
Yeah, yes, sir.
How did the person get to 10-0?
A lot of hard work, man. Hard work and a good team.
Tell us more about boxing. A lot of our listeners don't know nothing about boxing. They just think that two guys show up and they fight.
A lot of technique involved.
No, man. There's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot, you know, that a lot of people don't see. You know, they don't see the runs at 5 in the morning, the mountain runs, the strength training, the gym workouts, the sparring sessions. You know, everybody just sees the promotion of the fight. Oh, they're fighting. And then once in a while, you know, they might put up a video of them training, but they don't see the hard part, you know, the making weight, you know what I mean? All the little details that a fighter goes through that to perform at their best. You know, people just see the show at the end and they think, oh man, these fighters, you know, they come over here and, you know, they fight. There's a lot of stuff, man, that goes into it.
How much training do you do a day to prepare for a fight?
About two training sessions. We do like that, and then some training with the conditioning coach, and then sometimes it'll be three. It just depends like what we do with the
How many hours coach. A day?
About 2-3 hours each workout.
So that's a total of six. I don't think I ever worked out for 6 hours in my life.
Combined together.
Shit, I don't know. I got knocked out and missed.
Should've just
so you get up at 5 in the morning and start running, right?
Yeah. So sometimes we go to the like strength and conditioning coach. So we'll get up at 5 in the morning. Me and my brothers, I call them my brothers. They're all my stable mates. We get up. We all go together. We go do our strength and conditioning. We run mountains, do sprints. Sometimes we lift weights. And we'll get back. And then at 9, 10 o'clock, we go to the boxing gym. And we work out from like 9 to like, let's say, 12:30. And once we get out, we have dinner or lunch. And then later on in the afternoon, we go and we do our run, just like straight, like run, no hills or nothing, just a straight like 30, 40-minute run. And we call it a day.
So you train here in East Los Angeles, or you got a mean gym like up in the Beverly in Denver, Colorado,
with the
air is thin, or Big Bear like De La Hoya?
No, man, I haven't got, you know, I'm not at that level yet, you know, where I'm making checks where I could afford to pay all that expense, man. But no, we have a good training camp here in Montebello, California, right on Whittier Boulevard at the Santa Cruz Boxing Gym, now it's called. It used to be the Daniel Ponce de Leon Boxing Gym, but it's under new ownership now. But yeah, we have a great gym right there, man. We have everything that we need. Sparring partners, all the equipment we need. We have a sauna in case we need to cut weight. We have, you know, everything that a lot of gyms don't have. So it's a pretty complete gym. We have a good team, and we have a good training camp all the time here.
When did you start boxing? How old are you right now?
Right now, I'm 23. 23. I started boxing 7-8 years old.
Were you like in gangs or what?
No, I just liked to. I was just, my dad seen me. I was always a real hyper, you know, always running around everywhere. So he knew that I was going to be a little crazy once I started, you know, getting out of the house. So right away, as soon as I started understanding how to understand boxing, he put me in the gym. He started taking me to the gym, started getting me in shape, and I started doing it ever since.
Did you want to fight amateur too, like Golden Gloves, and train for the Olympics?
I never really trained specifically for the Olympics because my dad, his style of training wasn't really an amateur style. He wanted me to turn pro. But yeah, I fought amateur. I went to tournaments. I went to Olympic qualifying tournaments. I got a silver medal at the 2006 National PAL tournament. I lost to he was supposed to be an Olympic hopeful. It was a good fight. I won the Desert Showdown, I think, like 4 years in a row. I've won the Boxers for Christ. I've won the National Hispanic Tournament in Arizona. I won it 2 years in a row.
Hell yeah!
I got a silver medal at the National Blue and Gold. I fought three times. I got a silver medal to Jesse Magdaleno. I lost to him in the finals. So I went to a lot of tournaments. You know, a lot of big international amateur tournaments and stuff. But it wasn't really anything like the Olympics was never really in my plan to accomplish.
So, who was your first trainer, and what your dad was your first trainer?
My dad was my first trainer for about 2-3 weeks before he took me to an actual boxing gym. He took me to the park, to Hollenbeck Park, right there in Boyle Heights.
Or Fighting Ducks.
And yeah, nah, he took me there and had me running laps and yeah, taught me the basics.
He had me running right there, running from third.
Yeah, man, so I started running laps, getting in shape, learning the basics, the one jab, 1-2, body shot, and then after that, he took me to the gym, and about 2 weeks later, that's when I was training with Clemente Medina, and after that, he seen me, my dad working with me, and he asked my dad if he can get a chance to work with me, and ever since then, I was with him till 18 years old, so for about 9-10 years, I was with Clemente Medina.
So your dad was a boxer, but then he was deported?
My dad was a fighter when he was young. He came to the States. He fought. He started in Mexico, then he came over here. But I'm talking about when he was young. My dad's like 57 years old right now. So he turned pro when he was 14 out in Mexico. Then when he was 18, he came to the States, and he did a few fights here at the Olympic Auditorium. He had like maybe 4 or 5. And then he retired. He stopped boxing. You know, he just started having kids and, you know, had to figure out other ways to do it.
So your dad fought in the Olympic Auditorium, like what years?
Oh, man, I wouldn't even
be the early 80s? Early 80s, late 80s. So your dad was part of those Tuesday night fights at the Forum then?
Yeah, he fought at the Forum too.
Yeah, my dad used to go to those fights. It was Tuesday nights at the Forum. Every Tuesday night they have fights there. And he used to catch guys fight like Ruben Olivares.
Yeah, well,
El Puas.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny because my dad used to fight on those cards. So I'm pretty sure he went. And yeah, because I remember my dad would mention all those fighters.
Well, those are legends, bro. Yeah. So your dad would fight with all those killers, huh?
Yeah, on the same cards.
Your dad was fighting back then, man, when people didn't pay nothing. Bro.
Yeah.
You fight like 18 rounds, bro.
Yeah.
And then the only person that made money was Budweiser.
This is the fools that really wanted to do
it. For real, man. My dad would go every Tuesday night to the Forum to catch fights all the time. And those guys were the ones he saw. Mexican, bro, little fighter, bro, bantamweight, featherweight, flyweight.
Yeah, my dad was like a minimum weight now, but back then they didn't really have, because it wasn't that often that you would come across a full grown man that weighed 95 pounds.
Yeah,
that was my dad. My dad was a little guy. You know, you see him now, he's like this short. You know, so when he was in shape, completely in shape, he would weigh like 95 pounds, and he would always have to fight these 106 pounders, 110, 112 pounders, and he always would come out victorious. You know, he ended up with a record, I think, is 23-2. with about 20 knockouts, like almost every single one of them.
So your dad had that broken boxing nose? Like, no, you don't have it. That's
no,
good.
He don't have no broken nose, no cuts, no nothing. You
know, we have a friend named Joey Medina, man. He looked like life beat him up. You know, Joey Medina, he used to box. They used to call him the Kid Medina.
Yeah, that was, he was a cop now. Too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Joy, we have a comedian friend named Joey Medina, and he fought a guy that he lost against, and that guy ended up fighting Julio Cesar Chavez.
One time you guys said you were watching a video, and like, what happened to that guy? Oh, he got all fat. And it's like, you're fat too, dog. That bout was malicious. And what's up with, like, I mean, to fight, you got to be physically, but you also have to have a mental game, huh?
Yeah,
like, psychological attack definitely. And shit.
Yeah, for the most part, you know, you just got to be mentally ready for the fight. Not in the sense of the fight and being mentally ready, like wanting to win.
Right.
Just everything around you. A lot of fighters, everything that goes on in their life revolves around how they work, because boxing is our job. It's not just something that we like to go and do.
Right.
It's our job. It's what you know. We get up and that's what we have to do. So when other things are out of place, a lot of times sometimes we're out of place in the gym. So when it's fight time, it's real important to have your mind ready in all senses. And your life has to be, everything has to be good. You in your mind, you got to know that your training was 100%. You know, that's the main thing, too. If your training wasn't 100%, you're going to be very doubtful in your mind. You're not going to be mentally ready either. So if you're physically ready and you're mentally ready and everything else is in place, then you'll be 100% healthy physically and mentally for the fight.
We have comedians that go up and stay 100% not ready.
Yeah.
I mean, they suck. For real, they go up there, man. They pretend they've been training all day. They go to the best gyms. I know, man. For real, like, I'm pretty sure you run into boxers who go to the best gyms. Got the best gloves. They're always posting on Instagram. The grind. I'm here grinding, trying to climb this mountain. Then they get knocked down with one punch.
What happened?
And we have a lot of comedians like that, man. Who. I'm glad you're here laying it down, bro, that everything you're going to do, you're going to train. Even the slightest mistake, man, can hurt your body, man. A lot of comedians, man, they don't even train. They're not disciplined. They're looking for chicks at the end of the show.
And is that part of the job of your team, too, to help you out with that shit, you know, like strategy and also looking and researching the other fighter before you're going to get in the ring with the dude?
Yeah, that's
and knowing their record, their track record, what they do.
Completely my corner's job, and they've done a great job since I've debuted. You know, I have my trainers, they look at tapes, whatever tape is available of the fighter, we always find it and look at it and go over it and try to figure out a game plan, because you always want to have a game plan. There's fighters that go in the ring and they're like, well, you know, whatever happens. But no, it's always good to, you know, your body's gonna react on instinct
naturally,
you know, but it's always good to have a game plan to work from.
You've been knocked out of the ring?
No.
How about on the ring?
I've been dropped before. I've been dropped before. I haven't been knocked out cold, no.
I took a little knee.
Yeah. Oh, man. I was boxing one time when I was younger with an older guy from my gym, and he was supposed to be working with me. I was maybe like 16 years, I was probably 14, 15 years old. And this kid was 17. He's a lot heavier than me. He was supposed to be working with me, and he ended up just letting one go hard. And he was really tall, so when I was trying to hit him, I was jumping at him. The way you say, you jump at him, and then if you miss, you miss. But I missed, and I got caught. And I remember jumping at him, and then I just remember getting up off the floor, like, oh, what happened? But I wasn't like knocked out. It was just like a flash knockdown. But that's like the worst that's ever happened to me.
The night before the fight, the last fight you had, that did the other boxer send you hookers, man, to weaken your legs?
No, none of that stuff.
I'm like, when I heard about Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali doing that, like sending hookers to the other fighter, you know, I'm like, man, I should have been a boxer, man. That's how you get laid? And then I found out that one of the rules of the your trainer tells you is don't be with no woman before the fight. And I was thinking, man, that could have been easy for me. Do women really weaken legs before the fight?
I guess you can say, yeah.
Depending how good that shit is, dog.
Nah. Yeah, man, I was only for 2 minutes, man. Nothing happened to me.
Normal.
Yeah, I'll never get on top, whatever. Eh?
But that's through the whole training process, too, though, like weakening of the legs, not just the day before the fight, right?
Yeah. It starts from about 6 weeks out. You know, you want to start relaxing on how active you are, and then 4 weeks out, you none at all anymore. And it depends how many rounds you're fighting too. Like, I've been fighting 4 or 6 rounds, so we usually go like 3 or 4 weeks completely without it, and another like from 6 weeks back, you know, you relax on it. But once you start fighting 8, 10, 12 rounds, I'm more than sure I would probably need to take a little longer, maybe about 6, 8 weeks without it.
With that testosterone,
yeah,
and shit.
Yeah, yeah, you gotta keep it all in.
La fuerza.
You have a sparring partner?
I got many sparring partners. Yeah.
Are those guys part of the team too, or some they just get hired to get beat down?
No, some of them. I'm not at that level where I pay fighters yet, man. You know, I have great sparring partners, man.
What's the difference between a boxer like yourself, you know, who's gonna go on to be a champion, you know? And a guy who's just a sparrer, can he ever rise for just being that guy?
Yeah, definitely, man. You know, there's a lot of fighters. I think what separates that and what you just told me was the fighters that are able to make it are the ones that are able to perform the way they perform in the gym. So there's fighters that they look good in the gym and they train good in the gym, and then they go to the fight and then they can't perform the way they do in the fights. They freeze up. They see the lights. They see the people. They see the cheering.
Wow,
and
yeah.
They freeze up. So when you go to the fight, you gotta have the same mentality that you have in the gym. That's why when I go to a fight and people ask me, "Are you nervous?" I go, "No, I'm not nervous." I go, "I'm regular." I go, "This is every day to me. I do this every single day. The only difference, I'm gonna do it in front of some more people today, and that's it."
That's tight. I'm regular.
I never thought about that way because. Yeah, because that would be the difference. Because you've been training your all these 6 months on a gym, just you and your team, no audience. Then you go out, there's all these people are yelling, "You suck!" or "They love you!" or whatever. Man, you gotta be in your own mindset for that, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Be in the zone, dog.
Yeah, like because some people, man, like I know a lot of comedians are just funny on Instagram.
I'd be killing it on Twitter.
You're saying a sparring partner is only good in the gym. You know, they can help you get ready 100%. You'll be more than ready boxing a guy 6, 8 weeks. You know, he gives you the best work ever, but then you throw him in the ring, completely freezes up.
People start watching him on TV. Oh, shit, man, that's the guy who touched my girl. Or people have a criminal record.
Video that fool shoplifting and shit, huh?
Is there like a certain type of nutritional, like, you know, there's certain type of foods you don't eat on your training that are going to ruin you?
Yeah.
Like, no tortas, no alibis.
No gluten.
Greasy food. Basically, man, greasy food.
You're out,
stuff.
Rodrigo. You can't be no boxer, bro. Yeah.
I'll stick to tomatoes, eh?
You could be the guy that goes.
No soda, no beer.
No soda?
None of that stuff.
No weed, nothing.
Yeah, none of that stuff.
And do they test you before the fight?
Yeah, it's random. It's always random. It's usually before, after.
I never liked that word random, man. I've always been the guy they pick. I never won anything in my life, but I've always been randomly selected, man. I remember one time they were testing for drugs at my job, man, and then they picked me first. They came out, man. They tested the urine. The guy, he played with the water, with my pee, and turned it with a spoon, and it turned into a 20 piece of crack. I said, "Double up, nigga."
Who wants some?
So, you're fighting with Golden Boy, Oscar La Hoya. Did you meet him already?
Yeah, yes, sir. About 2-3 times.
You're a good fighter, eh? I really like it when you're fighting. we knew some guy that tries to imitate the La Hoya. It's horrible.
This fool has a CD, dog.
Oh my god!
With South Park characters too.
It's
dog.
Horrible.
Hey, dog, didn't they have it on the TV already?
This guy will stop his show and goes, "Oh,
wait!
I got a request to do a La Hoya impersonation." No, nobody.
No, I heard it. Somebody right there. Hey, far away.
So you're under contract for Golden Boy.
Yeah.
So we're gonna see you on HBO.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah, right? HBO, Fox Sports.
One of the goals, of course.
One of the goals, definitely. Pay-per-view.
It's next one, though. Fox Sports.
Yeah.
So your next fight is on Fox Sports.
Fox Sports.
Orale. We have you here first.
Hell yeah. And those fools keep their ear to the street to see who's coming up and who has, like, you know, Mad Flavor coming up and all that shit, who's knocking fools out, who has good records.
Yeah, definitely.
Because they want to get the top dudes, too, fighting in their ring and in their corner.
You have a fight coming up May 7th?
Yes, sir.
Right after the Manny Pacquiao fight.
Pacquiao, Mayweather showdown.
So what weight do you fight?
I fight at super bantamweight.
Super bantamweight?
122.
122. I don't think I ever weighed 122.
In the third grade.
I don't think none of the women I've been with ever weighed 122. Isn't that sad?
Tom messed up my back.
I never messed with a bantamweight chick. All my chicks been super heavyweight, bro. All my chicks have been, 122. So is there a fighting class under you? That's...
Yeah, under me is a bantamweight. The bantamweight division. 118 division. And there's under bantamweight is flyweight, 112. Super flyweight, 114 and 112, flyweight. And then under that, I want to say minimum weight. I know it's like 105.
Damn. That's right. Throwing lightning down. Fucking chingazos.
Yeah, look at super
quick
fast.
As hell, dude.
How about for Rodrigo? Is there a weight for 276? Yeah.
267.
Yeah. 267? Heavyweight, bro.
I'll be fighting Areola, huh?
Yeah.
Bang with it. Have psyched that fool. I'll put some oil on the ground. Should make that fool slip and catch him in the back of the head. Oh, shit.
How important is a good cut, man?
Definitely important. You know, you get cut and your cut's bad. You definitely don't want to be bleeding all over. Cut going in your eye if it's on top of your eye.
Could be Mick.
And also too, you get a cut and it's even if it's a little cut and your corner's not stopping the bleeding, it's gonna look a lot worse when there's blood all over your face and you're fighting. Even if you're winning the fight, it just looks bad because you have blood pouring everywhere and your corner's not stopping.
I never
know.
Knew that shit.
I remember I had a bloody nose, man, and I looked at my friend, the cut man. I looked at him, that fool passed out, eh.
God, man. I remember when everybody used to fight, they used to have a good bloody face, people just start walking away.
Oh, dude.
Fuck that. I didn't get no blood on my clothes.
I remember I saw this. The only thing I remember from watching boxing as a kid, that Chino boxers bled a lot, bro.
And they're always red. And... What's up with that, dog?
You ever
red China, dog.
You ever bled, like, you ever made somebody bleed from their mouth when they're fighting them?
Yeah.
Man, do you feel good, man, when you're, like, pumping them up and shit?
Yeah, it is. It's
a technique, man. Right?
It's an adrenaline rush, definitely, and especially when you know the other guy is as aggressive as you. You know, when they're really aggressive, and they're trying to take your head off, and you hit them with the. Usually, I do it with uppercuts. Hit them with an uppercut right to the mouth and bust their lips all open, and you see them pouring out blood, and that's what makes you feel
that's
good.
What's up, gives, yeah, gives man. You the,
I don't even fight.
You
want to
go in
blood.
For the kill, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to put on gloves right now, man.
It is fool. Fuck that. Give me a jumper, dog. What's with all these gloves and shit?
The sock and boppers. Right?
Hell yeah.
You have brothers and sisters?
Yes, sir.
Are they in a boxing game?
No.
What do they do? You're the youngest or the oldest?
I am second to the youngest. I have a little brother. He's just going to school. He has a kid, too. I have an older brother that works. He's a manager at a hotel in Beverly Hills. Then I have an older brother that he's a loan officer, I believe. My brother Danny, my oldest brother. I have a couple sisters. I have a sister that's a doctor in Ensenada, Mexico.
Awesome.
Yeah, I have another sister that lives here. She's a little. She's a stepsister of mine. She works at the American Apparel warehouse in downtown. So that's basically it. Yeah, that's all of us.
Now that you're in the boxing business. Have you ever seen shady stuff go down around you? You say, man.
You haven't ran into Don King, huh?
Nah,
has anybody told you yet to take a dive? Does that stuff really happen, man, like in the movies? When your manager walks up to you before the fight, hey, kid, today is not your night.
Hey, kid.
Today is not your night.
They say that shit still happens.
I haven't seen it personally in front of my eyes, but I've heard it, and I'm pretty sure it happens. But me experience it yet? No.
Nah.
Not like in that movie, man, Ron and Marlon Brando. He goes, "Today is not your night, kid. Not my night. I could have knocked him out. I could have been a contender. I could have had class. Instead, I'm just a bum, Charlie. I'm a bum.
A bum.
A bum, Charlie, what we are." So, how many kids you have?
I have one little daughter right now. I have another one on the way. Hopefully, I find out today what I'm having, whether it's going to be a boy or a girl.
Man, are you married?
No.
But if you get married, bro, you're going to start fighting child support next. For real. That money starts coming in, man. Girls start smelling that money. Because when I won last Comic Standing, bro, the mom filed for child support the next day. She became the last baby mama standing.
That shit DVR, dog.
Man. She had...
Oh, dude. I got to get paid, too. And what's up with your plan, like, as far as boxing? What's your plan in boxing? Like, how?
What's your goal?
Yeah.
My goal is to become WBC world champion. That's the main goal at the end of everything, is to become world champion and make sure that everyone's comfortable that helped me get there. My team, myself, my family, everyone that supports me. Make sure that all of us are living a comfortable life.
My goal, bro, is to be there when that happens, and hopefully nobody will hold me back and say, hey, bro, I know him, man. I don't want to be the guy that's being held by the throat and say, well, get the fuck out of here.
How the fuck in the ring right there and shit, and you put the little foot down, have you sneak up and be in the Instagram picture? What's up, dog?
But there's a lot of, like, do you have, like, I know you have a manager, but do you have someone taking care of you, like, making sure you don't go the wrong way or make bad decisions, like, you know, like...
Yeah, definitely my manager.
Fighting someone that you know is up, that's not even ready for your level yet.
My whole career and problems that I have inside and outside the ring, everything. My manager helps me out 100% with everything. He guides me. He gives me advice. He's there for me. Everything I need. I don't need anybody else. But all of my team, you know, they all give me advice when they need to or when they feel they need to. But for the most part, my manager takes a lot of care of me, man.
All right, man. You know, legally, it's supposed to only take 15%, man. So. I don't know if you heard.
You seem like a solid, well-rounded dude.
You know,
man.
I'm glad you have your manager right there, man, because you hear these sad stories, man. Like,
fucked up stories.
Sad stories, like these boxers that... I remember I saw this movie about Don King, and Don King walks up to the boxer, hey, you're going to fight Larry Holmes next. And then he goes, just sign right here. And the guy goes, where? But there's nothing written on this contract. Don't worry, I'll put in the blanks. Yeah, you got to have somebody to watch out for you, man, because the world's treacherous.
Hell yeah, yeah. It's just cold as fuck out there, dog.
Yeah, man, could you have I could see, man, like, you know, like, from what, I don't know nothing about boxing, but I know about grooming people. And I have a bunch of boxers. I will take him to the top, and then the other ugly-ass fool they have on the side, you know, that'll be his sparring partner.
You know, cause, cutting edge.
Because, you know, he has a face that I want to see in Coke. I want to see him in Sprite. You know, he's a clean-cut guy, you know, you know, he's never been broken no laws. I know he has no tattoos. He has tattoos, but I know that he's never been a gangbanger. Yeah. But then you got another guy that's already in trouble. Who do I go for?
Shit.
The guy that I could sell to Disney.
Hell yeah.
Have you maybe your own damn show or shit? Because you're young. That's going to happen, bro. You're going to be on TV, movies.
Hopefully that's God willing. That's the goal. No, that's what we're working for. So little by little, man, we take it day by day.
You have your own television show, like East Los High on Hulu.
Huh.
And then you'll be on Dancing with the Stars when you're 40, bro. Not right now.
With my new niece.
So you're going to have a very wild, man. You're going to watch, man, like, do you think, man, are you Mayweather and some boxers at that level? You know, because I know as a comedian, right, you know, I'm a funny guy. And I pretty much right now could have anybody open for me or... go up before me, and I'm a funny guy, but I'm not afraid of any comedian that goes up before me and be's funnier than me, because he's only going to do 15 minutes and I'm going to be on for an hour, you know. Or there's comedians, you know, who won't do certain shows because they know they're going to bomb. Like,
heard it's some tough over there.
Yeah, some comedians won't dare step into rooms that I've been to. Like Montebello, Wild Coyotes. You know Wild Coyotes? It used to be on Poplar and Beverly. Yeah, now it's called
Antiguas, right?
Now it's called Antiguas. But back in the days, bro, that shit was robbed by every gang you seen on Gangland. And we used to do rowdy shows there where people were, you suck! Yeah, and then comedians would suck, bro, there. So they'll say, nah, man, I can't do that room. I can't do that room.
I'm booked on Wednesday.
So my question is there boxers, when boxers become millionaires, can they pretty much pick who they want to fight? Like, they see a hungry guy like you coming up, and you know, you got a following, you're the next fool coming up. I would personally, myself, would ignore you. Like, I wouldn't want to fight you yet. I'll wait for you to get old, you know, For real, I will wait for you to get old. I will wait for you to lose your perfect record somewhere else, not with me.
Yeah.
You know, and then I'll fight you. And of course, I'll ask for most of the money. You know, I'll throw you maybe, what, 40% of the door deal, but I'll keep all the receipts. Do boxers do that? Do they have the power to do that? Because I know comedians do.
To pick and choose?
I mean, you have to work your way up to that level. But once you get to that level, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's fighters that are able to do that. But it's only fighters that get to, like, that higher than the top level. I mean, that superstar level, like Mayweather.
Pulling
Pacquiao,
strings.
Pacquiao.
Yeah, that can pull strings. You know, maybe not control everything, but can pull
but
strings.
At least what they do and shit.
Yeah, because at that level, man, you fight, you're going to be like, who am I going to fight? The next contender? Or this guy over here with a million followers on Instagram.
You got to keep that belt.
Do they work that way? Because I will pick the guy with a million followers on Instagram that I'm not going to knock out in the next round, in the third round. Or instead of this high-ranking guy who beat the odds in life, who has a crazy story about him growing up with no mom and his dad was locked up. He has the world on his shoulders now. And he's strong. You know what? I'm going to go with a guy who can't fight with a million followers. Because I know more people are going to pay to see that loser fight me than this guy right here who just wants to be Rocky and wants a fucking handout. Do they work that way?
Like I said, once the fighter's at a certain level and they have that power to do it, which is very rare fighters, I believe, ever get to that level. You know, I wouldn't know personally because I haven't been around fighters of that level, you know, enough where I would know how everything works. But I would imagine it happens.
I was at that level, bro, in comedy, you know, in like boxing, but they will call me up, Felipe, I got this show for $30. I'm there. Or, Felipe, I got this show that only pays $100 in San Diego. You're going to drive 2 hours. There's no room. Oh, okay, I'm there. But then, you know, like you said, that's the level that I was at that time. Like, when people throw in these horrible shows, oh, bro, Felipe, I'm going to send you to, you got this biker bar in Blythe, pays $200, no room, you're going to drive back. I'll take it because I'm hungry. But then, you know, I got better at it. Now I could pick and choose the shows that I want to do. And that's your goal, right? Because right now, they're probably, hey, you're going to fight this guy right now. And then do you have to say yes? Do you say no? Or
it's all up to my corner, but yeah. We take everything.
You have a team?
Yeah, I have my team. My whole team, my trainer, my manager, my corner man, my cut man, my number one trainer, my assistant trainer. So everyone, you know, we all get together and we all talk about it.
Because your manager, man, like he's like your best friend. He's your dad. He's the guy that really watches over for you, huh?
Yeah, he's like an older brother.
He's your older brother?
More like older brother, yeah. He's my older brother.
Oh, in real life?
Nah.
Oh. Cause he has to watch out for you. You're his little. You're his boy, man. Yeah. Like he has to look out for you. Make sure he makes the right decisions for you. They're gonna work well for your career.
Yeah, man, definitely. You know, it's important to have a manager that you trust. You know, that's the most important thing. A lot of fighters they try not getting managers. You know, they have their dad training them or it's just them and their whoever's training them, and they don't have a manager because they don't really trust anybody. But when I met Caesar, I got a word. You know, I got the word somebody asked me that I trust 100% that I've known my entire life. Asked me, he goes, you know what? If you need a manager, call this guy. His name is Caesar Garcia, and just do me the favor and trust him because they know how I am. That, you know what I mean? I don't really trust a lot of people. And I said, you're right. You know what? If you tell me I can trust this guy, then I'm gonna trust him. And I did it, man. I called him, and 3 months later, I was dating. Yeah, 3 months later, I was doing my professional debut.
Wow.
There's no I in the word team.
Albert Vasquez. Yeah, man, Albert Vasquez. He's out in Nicaragua right now. And he was my boxing advisor here in L.A. since I was little, always advising me what tournaments to enter, how, you know, giving me a lot of tips. Aside from that, he was just one of my dad's really good friends. I always see him. His son was one of my best friends when I was little. Matthew Vasquez, another really good fighter. So this is a guy I had a lot of trust in, you know, and he's not able to be with us right now, and he left. And when he left, I kind of, derailed my focus a little bit. And one day he called me, and like he said, like I said, he told me, if you want to get back in it, you want a manager, call this guy, just trust him. You know, trust me to trust him. And that's what I did.
What are your favorite boxing glove to use?
Everlast, man. Everlast. MX Everlast.
Everlast Sporting and Apparel Company, huh? East LA Top Team?
Yeah. From Ernie from Everlast hooks me up with the best gloves, man. Always Everlast, whatever style I want, but the Mexico style Everlast is my favorite glove to use.
How much preparation? What? Okay, we have a call from. All right. We have a call coming in now.
Hey, how you guys doing? It's Sean Leffler.
What's up, fool? Sean Leffler. What's happening, man?
What's up, dog?
How you doing, guys?
Chilling.
Good, man. We're here just talking.
I literally just got out of training, got done with my last workout before the fight, and now I'm just coming complete this for the show.
Yeah, man.
We
just finished talking here to Roy Pitbull Tapia, fighter out of Boyle Heights, East LA.
Nice. How's he doing?
He's doing awesome. He's right here.
I'm doing great, man. I'm right here. What's up?
Just getting ready for this fight, and then the UFC in May after that. So just calling weight already, feeling good, and weigh-ins are on Friday.
That's what's up.
And just doing my thing, you know. So I sent you guys some autographed gloves and tickets to the fight. You guys get them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we got them.
So you can get those out to some of the listeners and whatnot.
Oh, we will, man. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You're trying to get back into the UFC?
Yeah, the winner of this fight, I know, is going back to the UFC. The UFC actually called me to fight Uriah Hall about a month and a half ago on the East Coast, but Damn. They wanted to fight at 185, and I was 226, so I just couldn't cut 41 pounds in 4 days. It was short notice. So usually I can cut like 20 pounds in 2 days or so, but I can't do 40. To get 40 down, it usually takes me about a month and a half or whatever. So I walk around at about 225 and then fight at 185, and I'm 6'3", so it's a harder cut. So they called me to fight him. Then they also called me to fight a Ryan Jimmo at 205, but I was sick when that happened. So this fight was supposed to be against this guy, Tyrone Roberts, who is an undefeated UFC fighter, 45-11 guy. But he fucking grew a pussy or some shit and pulled out a week ago. So now he's got a fucking fighter that the King of the Cage champion got. So I'll fucking dislocate his jaw and see how that changes his life, you know?
Hell yeah, man. Just stay fucking focused, dude. Get ready to rock like you're doing.
So
exactly.
You were about to have your first fight at UFC, then you hurt your ankle.
Yeah, I hurt my ankle. I did, like, you know, the Ultimate Fighter stuff, and then I got kicked off that show for some bullshit for, like, previous, like, you know, they get all tripped out if you have, like, a record or whatever on some shit.
They're strict on that shit.
We're not going to lock a psychopath in a house with a bunch of guys that are going to be annoying him. We don't want to have a murderer on fucking TV.
Oh, yeah, so, but they allow Kimbo Slice on the show.
Yeah, but they let that motherfucking piece of shit on the show.
I know, right? So, I was surprised, like, when I found out they kicked you out, I'm like, wait, they kicked him out, but they let Kimbo Slice, a guy who's known thug, fighting everybody, knocking people out in the middle of the streets?
Yeah, the guy's a fucking joke, too. Like, that's the other thing. He's like a fucking cartoon character to me. I would fight that guy with my fucking arm tied behind my back and kick him in the fucking head. I got released from that show after winning my fight to get on that show. And then I go and I do the Bellator tournament. My coach was trying to kill him in the gym. So it was after winning Bellator and then losing in the semifinals, it kind of tripped me out with Hector being shot and killed in the gym. And some of my training partners got shot just in some random shit, you know, some jealous fucking coach guy. And so when that happened, I was kind of like, do I still want to fight? Do I still want to do this? My coach is here and stuff. And so I continued to fight and haven't lost since 2010. Got signed by the UFC.
Yeah.
Rolled my ankle walking down to the cage. And they were like, and it was fucking the size of a softball. And they were like, hey, you can't walk. You got a broken ankle. I was like, just tape it as tight as you can. And they're like, we can't. And the Nebraska State Athletic Commission doesn't let you tape any body part unless it has a cut on it, like an open wound. So I was like, well, give it a fucking knife, cut my ankle, and then kick the shit out of it, and I'll do a karate kid. I'll stand on one fucking leg and crane kick the guy.
Fucking soldier, dog.
You're a soldier, bro.
And Joe Stone was like, Sean, you got a busted wheel. We can't let you fight on one leg. We know you're not a wussy at all. Just get your shit better and come back. And then it was quite a lot of trial and tribulations. I thought it would be just a rolled ankle type surgery, and ended up being that the two bones went into each other and then called osteomyelitis, which is like a bone infection. So it started eating a hole in the bone, took like 8 surgeries, took plasma replacement cell therapy, like where they spin your blood and take out the plasma and separate the white and red blood cells and re-inject it back into the ankle. So I was out like 2 years. So then at that point, when I contacted the UFC to fight, they were like, hey, go get another fight to make sure your ankle's going to hold up and feel good. So I got a couple fights against a guy with like 100 fights and another guy with like, I think like 15 fights or something like that. And I beat both of them, and then the UFC started calling again for some short notice shit. But I had already signed for this fight. So I was just like, let me do this fight, and then we'll be like that. So assuming I win, which I know I'm going to, I'll be right back in the UFC. And then that fool Chris Weidman, he's a good guy because he's been hanging on to my middleweight championship for me while I've been out. So he's probably keeping that felt nice up on a mantle place or some shit. And then I'll be able to take that back from him in about a year and a half, you know?
Well, dude, I feel sorry for your fucking opponent, dude. You look like you're going to rock, and good fucking luck, dude.
Thanks, brother. Keep macking that shit.
So you were like born, so you were born and raised in Hermosa?
Oh,
you were born and raised in Hermosa Beach?
Born and raised in Hermosa Beach, you know, grew up in L.A.
Tortilla Flats.
I lived in Lawndale and Hawthorne and San Pedro, fucking everywhere. You know, my dad was an LAPD cop before he retired, and my mom was a Catholic school secretary, and all my cousins and shit are like Mexican from Whittier and Norwalk. So I just grew up in L.A. doing the fucking L.A. thing, you know?
Hell yeah, dog.
So what are you guys up to?
So we're chilling right here, bro.
In the studio right here. Right here with a pit bull of boxing.
We're right here just trying to get ratings.
Well, dude, I love your intensity, dog. You just look like you're a dude that's like, they're preventing you from like tearing somebody's head off, dude. So it's like, you know, keep going with that shit. But I know Felipe has some more questions
for you. Your new fight is on March 21st, this Saturday at the Valley Center in California. Regular admission, 35 VIP is $75. And the fight starts at 8 o'clock, right?
Yeah, the pro card starts at 8 o'clock with the main event, so it should be... Should be a really good card. There's I got a couple of my amateurs on the card. This guy Ben Smith is fighting for an amateur light heavyweight championship. Dylan Bartram, one of my fighters from the compound, the gym I'm in Oceanside, he's fighting on the card. We got this guy JP Cordero that actually went to high school with me. We grew up together, and then randomly he was he's a big guy that wrestled. He's a wrestling coach at Maricosta High School in Manhattan Beach, and he was helping me train for Tyrone, the original guy that grew a vagina. And we were getting my wrestling on point, and then I got a phone call from the promoter. He's like, hey, I need a heavyweight to fill in against this guy, Playboy Sanders from Vegas.
Playboy.
Do you have a heavyweight? And JP had never fought before. He just went to high school with me as a high school wrestling coach. And I was like, yeah, fuck it. JP will do it. And JP's like, wait, what? And I'm like, you're fighting pro on my undercard. And he's like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, just fucking deal with it, dude. You're fucking kill this guy. He's an old dude from fucking Las Vegas. And he's like, fuck it, I guess I'll do it. So he's fighting on the undercard, and he's a wrestling coach that I went to high school with. So there's going to be some good undercard fights, and there's like a beer garden. There's a bunch of hot fucking chicks that are going to be there. There's all kinds of hoes, too, if you want to
fucking get the chicks, dog.
Fucking, you know, fight groupies. And then they've got smoothies. They've got a tattoo guy that goes on tattoo to people.
Smoothies, Rasa.
They've got barbecue truck. And the best thing is Aaron Rodgers, Super Bowl MVP quarterback, is going to be there. So Aaron Rodgers will be there front row, too, supporting the cause and supporting the destroyer.
So there's going to be a lot of guys there with bald heads and who wear sunglasses in the back of their heads.
Exactly. A lot of guys are fucking like, they'll start off with a white t-shirt on with their fucking creases in it. And by the end of the night, they'll be wearing a white beater and sagging their jeans down.
So also, Sean, you have a documentary that's being released on April on iTunes. The documentary is entitled The Destroyer. Is that your documentary? You shot it?
Yeah. Rupert Sanchez from Amino Pictures, he's him and Mitch Castro. He's like, they're both like Mexican superstars, actually. Like down from Mexico, they've done some movies down there. The Castro family, they're really, he's like his mom, Michelle, and all these, and all these, you know, Castros are big movie stars and like Latin music stars. They have like hundreds of thousands of people at their show. And Rupert Sanchez is a really good director. And he came to me after talking to Rob Watt, who is actually Jennifer Lawrence of the Hunger Games production partner. Dang. And they like somehow heard my story, heard about the shit I've been through, the trials and tribulations. And they were like, hey, would you mind if we did a documentary on you? We're going to follow you around for a couple months. We're going to put it on Netflix. It'll come out on Netflix in April or May. And we'll put it on iTunes, make some revenue. And I think it'll be cool. We'll interview your dad, your friends, your training partners, your coaches. We'll interview everybody and get your story out there. And at first I was like, I don't know. And then I was like, you know what? if, you know, something happens to me, like happened to my coach or some of my homies, you know, growing up, like it'd be nice for some of my story to be told about pictures of me and pictures of my daughter and pictures of me training at 5 years old and fights when I was 13 and shit. So I told them, yeah, fuck it, let's do it. And they've been following me around for a month, and they've gone all the way down from like Mexico border training to El Cajon to the arena, San Diego Sports Arena with Andy Schnodig, Charlie Kohler, San Diego Fight Club, John Marshall, the UFC and Pride veteran up in Redondo Beach at Triton Training Center, the first American to ever get a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Bob Bass, is in Hermosa Beach at South Bay Jiu-Jitsu. They were there with him. They were there with me training all these other places at the compound, the gym I own in Oceanside. And then they got interviews with my dad. My dad had never done an interview in my fucking 15 years of being a professional fighter. He's never done an interview. He's always, like, declined him just because he didn't want to get involved in politics and not a huge camera person.
I don't vote!
He did his first interview and shit, which is pretty cool, and then he gave him a bunch of pictures of me as a kid. And I think it's going to be a pretty interesting documentary just because, you know, crazy shit happens in Southern California, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Sean the Destroyer, that's one of them.
She's been boxing for 20 years, fighting for 20 years.
Yeah, I've been fighting professionally for 15 years, 15 and a half years. Turned pro when I was 17, and now I'm 32 and a half. And then had some amateurship before that. You know, started out with like taekwondo when I was 4 or 5 years old, just like everybody else does. And then did the whole sport thing, the wrestling, football, volleyball, surfing, basketball, baseball, skateboarding, fucking everything that you would do. You know, probably say, take a heated dimple, like with the growing up in Southern California. And then kind of got more serious right before I was 18, had a kid young, you know, I got a 14-year-old daughter and stuff, and she's not my wife anymore. I saw her for the first 5 years of her life, but then the mom moved on and moved away and shit. And so I really had to start making some money when I was young, and I was like, you know, I'm not like some mama's boy or daddy's boy that's just going to take handouts, so I was going to work or fight for whatever I had. And, you know, I decided if this is the avenue that can provide me a lifestyle, let's
hell
do
yeah,
it.
You're a warrior, dog.
Moving down to Oceanside, I was living in the janitor's closet of the compound, and now I own the gym, the compound, open some other locations, and I'll get back and win that UFC belt, you know?
That's what's up, brother.
What's your record of unsanctioned fights?
Oh, shit, dude, like street fights and shit? Like, I would say...
Did you ever, like, fight any of those independent fights that Mariano, Big Dog, Mendoza fought?
Yeah. I went now with Muay Thai, like unsanctioned Muay Thai. I was 17-1 with amateur boxing stuff, whether it was sanctioned or unsanctioned. I went 52-10-1.
Wow! So you have a big long career besides before coming into the UFC, huh?
Yeah, and then I did 25 amateur MMA fights. I took 3 bare knuckle boxing fights overseas, and then now I'm 27-5 professional MMA. So I've had somewhere around, if you do the math, I think it's like, you know, almost 200 fights total, like in the ring. And then I probably got another, like, realistically, like a realistic number, maybe like another 25 fights that happen in fucking bars or alleyways.
Alleyway crew over here, though.
Sometimes.
Yeah. We have Pitbull right here. He's a new boxer out of Boyle Heights. He fights under Golden Boy Productions. He's a young boxer.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any advice for a young boxer? You know, in the game, you know, who's just got into it, he's 10-0. What would you give a young boxer advice? He's a boxer.
Well, boxing, by the way, if you'll ever see my house, like, I've got whole walls dedicated to different boxers. Like, one wall's Cassius Clay. It's all authentic, you know, gloves that have, like, real Muhammad Ali sparring gloves and scorecards that were from the fight, authentic unused ticket stubs that were never used for the 1960 Rome Olympics and shit. Like, I love, you know, the pugilistic sweet science of boxing. Like, the art of boxing is my favorite out of all the martial arts. Boxing is a martial art. Most people don't think of it like that, but it is. And I love boxing. So my whole house is decorated with boxing shit. But on that same note, boxing's so different than MMA. One of the reasons boxing is so different than MMA is they make real money, dude. Like, big boy money. And when it comes to MMA, we make a fraction of what the boxers make. They were really good at building a sport. It took a lot longer, too. You know, most people, all these MMA guys bitch and moan, oh, we don't make as much money as boxers and shit. We got to do knees and elbows and takedowns. I'm like, dude, fuck you guys. Boxing's been around, for, you know, like as a professional sport since the 1600s. I was like, and then before that, there was, you know, more like the gladiator medieval type shit. But there was fisticuffs boxing in the 1600s. I was like, we're only 30 years into our sport. The inception of the mixed martial arts as a game, that was 1988, was the first real MMA fight. So I was like, we got to wait, you know, a little bit to get to the money they're at just because of the evolution of the sport. And they used to be on NBC and CBS. I watched Mike Tyson. My dad would wake me up at 10 p.m. Hey, I and Mike's about to fight, you know, and that was on ABC television or CBS, regular network television, not, you know, Fox Sports or Fight TV, you know, which is a little bit more cable oriented. So for boxers, you've got to run your career, especially a young guy, 10-0 guy like Pitbull, you know, Boyle Hype. Being from L.A., he's a good-looking guy. He's a great boxer, undefeated. He's got to be smart about the fights he picks early, not to say, like, oh, pad your record or fight easy fights. Don't do that. Challenge yourself in the gym, though, because a 15-0, 16-0 boxer, he could walk into a $400,000 contract, where the difference of a 15-0 guy in promoter's mind to a 13-2 guy is so big, which is crazy, but it's the way it is with the sport of boxing. So he's got to be safe, smart fights. Challenge himself in the gym with his hard sparring sessions, and then when he's 15-0, 16-0, 17-0, he can be 18-1, 19-1, you know, 25-2. Then you're going to be getting some fights that are going to be upwards of $500,000, million fights. So for a young boxer, you have to stay disciplined in the gym, I think. He's like, spar real hard, have your wars in the gym, go to other gyms, have your wars there, then be smart with your fights until you get that big money fight, because he could be, Pitbull could be looking at one contract that's a $25,000 contract to fight a 8-1 guy, but then he could get a fight for $2,000 offered for an 18-8 guy. And when it comes to boxing with a 10-0 guy, I would say, hey, take the 18-8 guy, be 11-0, get some experience, you know, instead of the 25 grand for the 8-1, because God forbid it goes to a draw and then he's 10-0-1. Now he's, his next fight, the maximum he could make might be 25,000-30,000. Where if he's 11-0, he might get called up to replace a guy, you know, on a Canelo undercard or something and make 100 grand. So that would be my advice to him, is just put your wars in the gym, build your record up, and then wait for the payday for the big tough fight, and then you'll have tough fights. But after you get that recognition and notoriety and that exposure, tough fights will keep coming, but real money will come to take care of his family, you know?
Orale.
Definitely. Thank you.
Orale.
I'll take that all in.
Sean, you want to give a shout-out to your promoters or sponsors?
Yeah, absolutely. I, like I said, the Milagro Entertainment Group, Josh and Sergio, I know you know those guys. They hooked up this interview, so I got to give love to those guys. I really appreciate them taking care of me and hooking up interviews and stuff like that. And then the four gyms I've been training at, or five gyms, have been South Bay Jiu-Jitsu, Triton Training Center, the Compound, my gym, San Diego Fight Club, and the Arena. And then sponsors, ITAN, Tanning Salon in Oceanside, California. There's so many fucking hot girls that work there and stuff. So if you're in Oceanside, go by there, check out the managers and the chicks that work at the Tanning Salon. It's not a bad environment at all. And then they hooked me up. And then, like, the Grand Prix Moto Raceway over there is sponsoring me for this fight, along with some other companies and whatnot. Mike Malaf, the MMA Melee, and then Rupert Sanchez, the guy that Amino Pictures doing the documentary, have been super cool and kind of like a member of the family. And then Felipe Esparza, man, you won the fucking last comic standing.
That's right, fool.
You're the fucking man, dude. I got
Roy, we gotta get you on the studio one day, man.
100%, man.
All right,
man. Next Wednesday or the Wednesday after that, I can come in the studio with you guys for sure, right after I get out of this fight and shit.
Hopefully you will be bandaged up like a mummy. Hopefully you win.
Hell yeah,
the only thing that's going to be wrong with me is my fucking left hand's going to hurt a little bit. My right hand's going to hurt a lot because I'll be digging teeth out of my fucking knuckles.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, the Destroyer.
That's right.
Spitting knowledge like a fucking machine gun and shit.
Thank you very much for being here, bro.
Hell yeah, brother.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me. And then I'll put the links up to this all over my Facebook and get you guys a bunch of replays and listens on it and whatnot.
Thank you.
And I just want to tell all my fans, you know, support Felipe Esparza, man. Support guys like this that are supporting mixed martial artists and up-and-coming rappers and up-and-coming comedians, up-and-coming actors. Like, Felipe did some big shit on, you know, with his career, with his life, you know, switching his whole life around and shit and winning the last comic standing. So all my fans and listeners that here, get this guy love, be a fucking listener to this guy, call him to his radio show and support guys like this that support people that are, you know, trying to chase their dreams. So I just want to thank you guys. And Pitbull, Floyd Heights, if you guys want to see a fucking Treadino boxer coming up, this is the fucking guy to watch. If you're a sponsor, if you like boxing, hit him up and get behind him because he's undefeated, good-looking guy from L.A. You can't go wrong with that, you know?
Hell yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. What's up? Thank you guys so much, and hopefully I can see you in person either next week or the week after that.
Yes, bro.
All right, man. You guys have a good one.
Thank you.
All right, Sean. Be cool, dog.
Later, guys.
Stuff was pumped up.
Pumped up.
Let me tell you, brother.
Macho Man Randy Savage. Intense.
I like that fool said.
He had me up against the wall, dog.
I got punched. That fool said, my left hand's going to be hurting, and my right hand's going to be hurting from pulling on teeth.
That fool had you up against the corner and made you buy those Girl Scout cookies. Buy these for my daughter. All right, dog.
I'm going to give a shout out to my waiter.
And the guy in the corner that always drinks vodka, that fool right there, pop off. That dude, he's cool. No, not the guy with the hoodie, not the one with the hat.
And Melissa over there, you know who you are. So what's up, Roy Pitbull?
What's up, man? Nothing much, man.
Right? Got a little daughter right here, man. Full-time father, full-time boxer.
Yeah, man. I'll take her with me all day. I'll have her with me in the gym, go run, everything.
What'd you think of Destroyer? Do you remember him when he was on... On the UFC show?
No, I never even watched that shit. I've heard about it and shit, but no. I never even seen it.
Sounds crazy.
Oh, dude, that fool was fucking killing me with that shit that he was saying, dog. A fool that grew a pussy, dog. That fool just said, let me fight.
That's funny, he goes on, his father, man, I met a lot of guys who their dad was a cop, and all of them are crazy.
Oh, hell yeah, fool.
And like, if you're a son of a cop who doesn't grow up to be a cop, you're going to be some crazy
Those
person.
Were the meanest dads I've ever known, dog. Cop dads. Seriously, dog.
I know, man. I can't have a dad that's going to give me a drug test every week. Felipe, you tested for Vicodin. I know grandma gave me one of her pills. You have any shout-outs, promos you want to give to people, man?
Yeah, man, definitely. I want to give definitely a big shout-out to City and Vince from ABG. I want to give a shout-out to NutriShop, my new sponsors. I want to give a shout-out to my manager, Cesar Garcia. Best manager in the world.
Cesarin.
I definitely want to give a shout-out to all my fans and friends out there that support me and go to my fights. I want to thank them from the bottom of my heart. Without them, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Hell yeah, dog.
You know, I want to give a thank you to Ernie from Everlast for always giving me
Earn dog.
Gear, all my equipment, shoes, everything I need. He's always there for me. I want to thank the East LA Top Team.
East LA Top Team.
My buddy Ozzy making his own team. You know, he's always supporting me. He's always helping me out. He always tries looking for sponsors for me. And he's building his own brand right now. It's called East LA Top Team. He's getting all the fighters that train in our gym, and he's making videos and trying to just get us as much publicity as we can. You know, he's trying to bring us all up. So I got to give him a big thank you, man. He does everything out of the kindness of his heart and his own. He does everything on his own time. And I want to give him a big thank you.
He's a good dude.
Can I ask your manager one question right here, real quick? Cesar, you want to get on the microphone real quick?
Fantastic way.
Yeah, right here. It's not on? It's on, yeah.
Yes.
When you saw Roy, what attracted to him the most?
In reality, I didn't know anything about Roy. Again, it's Albert who referred me. He said, take care of this kid. He needs to get started in his pro career. And Albert has been one of the top scouts. He's gotten guys.
Albert.
Yeah, he's gotten
the
guys.
The Nicaraguan
like,
dude?
Albert, yeah. He's actually from El Salvador, but he lives in Nicaragua.
El
Salvador's kind of crazy, you know what I mean?
The Nicaraguans with Mayorga and all that shit. Nice. They're badass dudes.
Yeah, he says really nice out there and, you know, real peaceful. So he's out there. But, you know, he discovered guys like Perro Angulo. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah, I know that.
Perro Angulo, the kid who just fought for a world title.
Chris Avalos.
So he's got a good track record of finding talent. So if he says this kid's talented, then you kind of got to believe him, you know? And sure enough, I mean, you know, that it is what it is. He's got the goods. Now it's up to him, you know?
It's up to you, bro.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Knock who's out.
Exactly.
You know a boxer named Paul Gonzalez?
I don't know him personally, but yeah, I've heard of him.
He was from my neighborhood. He won the first gold medal in 1984.
Are you serious?
Hell yeah, bro.
That's cool. Seen him at the barbershop the week before last.
He would have been a contender, but that fool's arm used to break after every fight.
His hands, right?
He had weak hands. Every fight he had, but my dad said, no, no, pero se quebró la mano cada pelea.
No le gusta la leche. Yeah.
A lot of those older legend type fighters are around East LA. Real, like, you walk right up to him, really nice guy.
Yeah.
Paul, you know, Bobby Chacon.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, legend. Yeah.
Really nice guy, you know.
That's one thing have with you. You guys are going to, you know, to push forward that legacy and do good and, you know, make it even bigger than it was out of the, you know, area in SoCal that you guys came out of and are coming from.
Yeah, man. All the great fighters, like the Latino fighter, Alexis Arguello.
Yeah.
That fool's a Miami Vice. Carlos Palomino. Your dad probably fought with Mantequilla Napoles. All these old fools. Tony the Tiger. Tony the Tiger, the Little Rooster, I forgot his name, Little Red?
Little Red.
Red Lopez.
Yeah, Little Red Lopez. He's from another East Los.
Yeah.
That was a fight, like, but we only get old school, man. 1980. That was Bobby Chacon. No, Carlos Palomino and Little Red fighting together.
Yeah, there's a lot of good fights came out of where you said the Forum.
Yeah.
That place is legendary, you know?
So tell us more about, real quick before you go, because we didn't even mention it that much. Tell us about what Golden Boy Promotions is doing in downtown LA with bringing back fights, the Alley Club over there at the Belasco in downtown.
Yeah, well, it's pretty obvious, and everybody that's in boxing knows that Los Angeles area is pretty much the mecca. Even though everybody wants to fight in Vegas, the best training, the best fighters are probably here in Los Angeles. So
that should give me the chills.
Yeah, they want to take advantage of that and really build those guys. And locally, you know, grassroots level. And they started having the events here at the Belasco Theater, downtown LA, which the first event, you know, literally sold out like in a day or two. People were calling. Usually, you know, they ask us to sell tickets and we're calling people and everybody's avoiding our call. For this one, people were calling us.
Hell yeah.
And we were avoiding their call, you know what
promoting
I mean?
Promoting
that. Yeah, we didn't have tickets, but it was a great event, man. It was really, you know, packed house. Good fights, and they're going to continue to do it.
And good seats.
Great seats.
Great seats.
Good atmosphere.
Yeah, the atmosphere is awesome.
The club atmosphere, the way they have it set up.
You're so close. Whatever. If you say something loud enough, the fighters are going to literally hear you from wherever you're at. So
great acoustics in there, man.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So Roy will be fighting, again, May 7th at the Belasco in downtown L.A. Golden Boy Production brings back L.A. Fight Club. Going down May 7th. Don't miss it. Get tickets early at www.goldenboypromotions.com or look for Caesar East Los. Hey, bro, I remember you from way back when, bro. Give me a ticket.
Exactly.
You get that?
Not yet. I started to a little bit, but, you know, not yet. Hopefully I get to that, you know?
I know you got
to
change your phone number after a while, man. People, oh, this guy forgot where he came from. Well, bro, I don't come from a place that gives away free tickets all the time.
Because that's definitely the question I get. Like, everybody, like I say, I call them, like, we have tickets for the fight, you know? And like, everybody thinks I'm giving them away, and it's like, no, we need support, you know? We need to keep this going, so.
We really got to protect Roy, because a lot of times people want free stuff. Like, hey, Roy, can you wear my T-shirt? And then you go, boom, his shirt starts selling. Roy doesn't get nothing.
Yeah.
You got to watch out for clothing lines, huh?
We do, but a lot of times when you're an up-and-coming, and there's really no clothing lines that want to help you, you know, we'll work with somebody that is willing to support us from the beginning.
And, shout out to ABG.
Yeah, ABG.
Anybody gets it. City and out in San Diego, yes. Always hooking me up.
Yeah, they'll support. And so, you know, if they did start, you know, helping us out early, and hopefully we get to a level where we're picking and choosing sponsors, then we could stick with the people that backed us up from the beginning, you know. Hopefully we get to that level. But right now we have a solid team with sponsors, and, you know, we want to make them happy with promoting and making sure this kid is out there, you know?
Get him out there, bro.
Yeah,
get you the nice prize fights so you won't be around for it. So you won't, yeah, hell yeah, man.
There's space on the trucks if you want to do a little something for your
we'll
show.
We'll do it, bro. Hell yeah.
Put a picture of you or something if
hell
you
hell yeah. We need a sponsor for this show, too. So, man, that's so you guys treat you. This is your boy, right? This
yeah,
is your guy.
My boy. He's my first.
Come on, fight. Rocky. Rocky.
Yeah, I picked the day I picked him up to I tell him that's the day my life changed, you know, because it really is what turned me into a manager. And, you know, now just of course, you're trying to make money here. But not only that, but now it's like one of those things like I have to try to make this kid blow up just to say that I did it, you know, because he's who I started with. So, but yeah, I mean, I do what I can, make sure that he's got the opportunities that he needs to blow up. And and you know, of course, everything is gonna. It's, you know, what do they say? The shit rolls downhill.
Everything's gonna happen, yeah. Man.
That right? Snowball effect.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. So you know, we all get paid. So it really, man. at the end of the day, the goal is, you know, for him to blow it.
All right, so
I gotta protect him from himself.
Keep that team,
you know?
Solid.
Yeah,
Golden Boy. Hell, so you guys are under Golden Promotions?
Yeah, Golden Boy Promotions.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Yeah, you have a contract under them?
Yeah, he fights for them. I'm the manager. I negotiate those contracts for fights, pick the opponents, stuff like that. But the promoter is Golden Boy.
You got yourself a webpage?
Webpage, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. You got a webpage, bro.
No, well, I don't have an actual website. I don't.
Well, can you get one?
Instagram, Facebook.
You need to get an actual webpage before somebody else decides to buy it for you and then try to sell it to you for $5,000. What happened to me?
You gotta do Pitbull. Yeah,
for real. Somebody bought Felipe Esparza.com, and then when I win Last Cover Standing, this guy wants to sell it for $7,000 to me.
So then you
and
got,
I said, I became Felipe Esparza.net.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. 7,000 reasons not to buy it from his ass.
Okay. So what's up, Caesar, man? Thank you for being here, man, and bringing your boxer with us, and hopefully we'll be at the fight. We're gonna keep supporting Roy. Because you have a lot of supporters, bro, on Instagram. People love you already. You have a growing fans that were hitting me up. Hey, you got to have Pitbull on here, blah, 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 blah. And then we had a guy here that worked for ESPN Sports, Beto Duran. He announced his boxing, and he mentioned you. He mentioned El Camarón. Is that another one of your fighters?
No, he's not one of my fighters. Oh. He's a good friend of ours, though, and he's actually headlining in April. There's an April card, and he'd be headlining. Camarón, tough kid.
Yeah, so Beto Duran, man, he had a lot of great things to say about you. He was on our show last week, and he announced his boxing. He said, you're going to have a nice, good career.
Hopefully, God willing.
Hopefully, you won't forget about the little people here, this podcast with no sponsor.
Man, never. Also, we'll be back. I got something for you guys. I got an autographed team jacket, one of my corner jackets that we used for my last fight. I'd like to give it to you guys
for
the contest you guys are having.
All right, thank you, man. We'll put it on
you
the show.
If you want to wear it.
Hell, for you, if you want to. Is it Everlast?
It's the Everlast one,
Everlast one.
It's an actual corner, corner jacket at the corner.
Got you a robe.
I remember we used to have our friend Joy Medina. He's a boxer, right? And he used to have a joke, like, I would tell women, I'm a boxer. You don't see my pictures? Okay, put my picture flat on the floor. Okay, that's how I look.
He gets sponsors on the bottom of his feet.
Yeah,
right?
Man. So anything else you want to say, Caesar, for our listeners who are here, we have listeners in Texas, all over the world.
Hell
now.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, really, just come out and support, man. I got Roy Tapia. I have a stable of five fighters, all good fighters. Another kid, Oscar Negrete. He's a Colombian kid from, from Colombia, of course. Tierra Alta, Colombia. He's pretty good, too. He's a Golden Boy as well. And then Danny Reyes. He's a state champion. You've got Oscar Torres, another Colombian.
Edwin Solis,
who just fought a war on Saturday. It was on Unimas. Come on, support us. We're going to represent for LA and, keep knocking people out, hopefully.
And also, man, you guys should go to these fights that are at the Belasco Theater in downtown LA because you're watching young fighters on the way up. You know, that's something you can never see before. You would always see that on television, live from ESPN. And now that they're bringing fighters back in Los Angeles, you could actually see someone coming up. Now you could say, man, I saw Roy Pitbull in downtown LA, and now I can't even afford to pay it on pay-per-view. And you only have that story, man. People love having that story of watching somebody grow up from the beginning. And if you like those stories, man, you be there May 7th, and you support these young fighters, man, because, you know, one day they're going to blow up. And you're going to have a story to tell your son. Oh, yeah. I remember I saw Roy Pitbull. He took a picture of me after the fight. Now I can't even shake his hand.
Don't be lying.
Like my dad talks about going to the Olympic. Maybe we'll talk about going to the Belasco.
Yes. You have a Belasco story, man. Oh, yeah. Not like me when my dad took me to see Mil Máscaras and I sat in front of a pole at the Olympic Auditorium. Horrible seating.
My parents used to do those too at the Olympics.
Mexican, save money, dog.
They had the Mexican death match.
We thought he was going to be a VIP right there. On me, mask on his shoulder. And man, cabrón.
Ichi Roddy Piper.
That was an extra 20,
the Olympic
dog.
Is a church now, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's a church, yeah.
So the show's a forum,
you
want to
sit behind the pole now.
Oh, yeah. So what's up, fool?
Chilling, dog.
All right, people, I'm going to be at Harlow's this week in Sacramento.
Sacktown.
The show is sold out. Sorry, man, but they only added two shows. Next week, I'll be in Pittsburgh, March 26th through the 29th. Anybody in Pittsburgh, know any Mexicans in Pittsburgh that want to show up, show up. April 1st, we have the live podcast taping at Ice House in Pasadena. What's up, fool? Thank you. Roy, for
Hell
being
yeah,
here.
Roy.
Yes, sir, man. Thank you guys for having
Success,
me.
Success, dog, and fucking keep on training, kicking ass, dog. You too, Caesar, man, for bringing that fucking heart up. And
thank you.
Respect to both of you guys, man.
Bringing that Los boxing again.
Yeah, man. Hell yeah, dude. Keep that spirit alive,
dog. You guys should come to the gym sometime and get a little sweat in, you know?
Jim's Burger?
Yeah, Jim's Burger.
Yo, man.
Yeah, man. Hit us up, man. Peace out, dog.
Bates.
Follow Out These Comedy, outthesecomedy.com.
Hit me on Twitter and Instagram, man.
Where you grew up at?